Welcome to the OpenIC, the investment committee in your pocket. In this show, we talk to M&A and strategy leaders that want to make a dent in the world and combine success with freedom. My name is Toby Liebsch. Today, I'm talking to John Younger. John is one of the leading voices in the HR space, and that's no wonder because John has transformed the way that hundreds of companies around the globe lead their people to success. Now, he's the biggest advocate of what he calls the freelance revolution, and he writes about it in publications such as Forbes and the Harvard Business Review. In this episode, John and I discuss the state of freelancing in the world and what motivates successful freelancers to quit their full-time job. John, congratulations on launching the Global Survey on Freelancing. I know that was a lot of hard work. Let me jump straight in because you are an accomplished scholar. You've been a management consultant, a very successful management consultant with your own firm. Mm-hmm. But instead of retiring, you've dedicated your work to what you call the freelance revolution. So what is it that excites you so much about freelancers?
There are a few things, actually, Tobias. First thing is that I was just looking for something to keep brain cells in my head. So one of the nice things about the freelance revolution is that it's interesting enough so that it forces me to think hard enough to keep those brain mm-hmm. cells in. Second, it's a little autobiographical. We used to call freelancers contractors or stringers. What awful terms. You know, what I was learning was that this was the dawning of a new type of employment, if I may put it that way. Now, let me take a step back. If you're interested in taking a little bit of a tour down history lane for just
Let's
one second.
Let's go down history lane. I'll put some music in the background. That's great.
The first indication of freelancers was 6th century BC. Cyrus, the Persian king, hired a whole bunch of Greek soldiers to support his army. So mercenaries were the first of the freelancers.
Right, if it would have been graphic designers or programmers.
No, the graphic designers were at first. We also know that the Romans back way 200 BC, 100 BC, and then into the first 100 or 200 AD, was hiring contractors to build their great monuments. The Parthenon was built by contractors, a contract workforce, and a contract architect, and a contract engineer. So there's a lot of history behind this stuff. And what was so interesting for me is that it was a different type of relationship than the traditional relationship between an employee and an employer.
If
you think about it, the relationship between employee and employer is kind of colonialist. It's not the same thing when you think in terms of freelancers who are in fact peers and colleagues looking at their business work, their project as peer work done for a rather than subordinate work or a boss. It's a different kind of a relationship.
Yeah.
The last thing was that I was doing a very large project for McKesson, the large pharmaceutical supplier, and had the interesting experience of sitting down with their head of HR, that was the topic, the HR organization, and saying 30% of the workforce at McKesson, it's a very large workforce, 30% are contracts. 30% are freelancers or gigsters
30%.
Or contractors.
Wow.
30%. And part of the message, Tobias, was, and you don't care about these guys. You don't know them. You don't care about them. You're not paying attention to them. Mm-hmm. Nobody's worrying about how they're doing, et cetera, et cetera. And that seems pretty crazy to me.
Yeah, let's dive right into that fascination with people, because I do not know how the sentiment in the States is, but of course, in Europe, we have more legislation, often to the good, sometimes to the worse. I'll leave that up to the viewer to decide that. But here in Europe, freelancing is still often associated with the what we call gig economy. And that is associated with delivery drivers on bicycles, delivering food for a minimum wage. Now, is that revolution driven by businesses subcontracting unskilled workers? Or what are we talking about?
It's a great question. And let me distinguish freelancers and gigsters. And one of the things that you'll hear me saying is that the industry's got to get its language, and we don't have the language. Right now, we're talking about freelancers, open talent, independent talent, all sorts of names.
Yeah.
But no agreement. When we think about freelancers, we're thinking about professionals who have chosen to be independent rather than employed. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. These are people with typically advanced education or very specific education, qualifications, certifications, etc., that are doing work as a peer, as a small business person, you might think of it, and their small business is their expertise. So you'd find consultants are in there, marketing freelancers are in there, you'd find a lot of tech people in there, and many other categories that we'll go into. Gigsters are people who are trying to cobble together an income doing a number of non-professional things. That doesn't mean, non-professional doesn't mean it's not hard. So when I see somebody in TaskRabbit walking 12 dogs down my street on 72nd Street in Manhattan, I am impressed beyond belief, because getting my dog to walk alone is difficult. But at the same time, the reality is these are not professional jobs. This is not professional work. And as a result of that, there's a bit of a sort of a drive, or has been a drive to the bottom in terms of pay, which is not the case in freelancing for the most part, because this is expertise that in many cases you wouldn't be able to attract or hire on a full-time basis if you were a startup, if you were a small business, etc. But yet they're able to do that when they buy a fraction of their time on a project basis, what we call on demand.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. So we're differentiating almost also blue and white collar in a sense. It's part of it.
In a sense, yeah. I think that we're getting so confused about what's blue and what's white that I certainly take your point. But I think it's important to remember that freelancers are, and I'll say it again, freelancers are professionals that have chosen to operate independently rather than as an employee. And therefore, they see themselves for the most part and need to see themselves as a small business. Now, what does that mean? A small business has a brand. A small business has a name. A small business has a resource base. A small business
has
all of the things that small businesses have. Whereas when I'm a gigster, I don't have a small business. I have a number of activities that pay me some money. It's a very different thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's zoom in on these professionals. Because you just mentioned a couple of verticals already. Now, in your global survey on freelancing, you've, of course, I know you have all the numbers, John. I know I can't throw any question at you and you will have all the numbers in your head or on paper. I can't fool you like that. But let's walk through those professionals, because also when I first talked to Omer, the founder of FinTalent, he was in finance and he saw all these marketing and design people, just like me. I'm also a marketing and used to be a design person. All those programmers, and we were sitting in those cafes and we were feeling so cool with our stickers on our MacBooks. But I know we're not the only ones, and I've read that we're not the only ones, but who are those freelancers, really?
That's a great question. Think of it, there is a company like Talmix in the UK that has about 50 or 60,000 people on its platform.
Wow.
Most of these folks are either former consultants or former executives that have moved into independent consulting. Mm. You'd find a Comatch in Germany, which Christoph Hart and his colleagues
built
a very nice platform. I think it's got 10 or 20. You find OMS and Sneakers and Jackets and Weem and many others that are in France, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So those are the sort of management consulting. That's the management consulting part of the professional area, but tons more. Let me give you just a few examples. One is a company like CollabTree. CollabTree provides, it's a marketplace, and it provides research scientists for organizations. They played a very big role in COVID-19 vaccines.
Wow.
Another one in the same category is LifeSci Hub, a US-based, and they're in the business of pharma quality assurance. They have a couple 300 people, I believe, maybe a little more now, that are in the business of pharma project management, more specifically project quality assurance. That's really an interesting situation because in both CollabTree and LifeSci Hub, historically, pharma companies were resistant to freelancers.
Of course.
What's the expression? Never waste a crisis. And no. What we've seen through COVID-19 and everybody went to remote, what we learned when we all went to remote, Tobias, was that the difference between a full-time freelancer working on a project for you and a full-time employee working remotely on a project for you, not much difference. The same relationship.
We've known it all along.
And as more and more people have gotten into hybrid kinds of roles or remote kinds of roles, what we've seen is a greater willingness on the part of organizations and a greater need. Now, there's one other piece, and that's why freelancing is growing very quickly in Europe. And that is laws, employment laws in Europe are very tight.
Yeah.
And what we know is that it's really tough to fire somebody.
Yeah.
It's really worrisome to make the decision to hire somebody because we feel like we're making a lifetime choice rather than a transaction.
100%.
The consequence of that is that many European firms are much more open to using freelancers because they don't have the same dilemma. If I hire you part-time for 6 months, I don't have to worry about, as long as I manage it correctly, I don't have to worry about you having me for the rest of the century.
Yeah.
So we're seeing a lot more in terms of freelancers. We're seeing a lot more in terms of what we call interim management, a category of freelancing.
Yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. So that's what's going on. And what you'd also see are so many variations. There's a platform for freelancers in the diplomatic corps, former diplomats for many countries that are providing additional support for countries or for agencies.
Wait, you're telling me there's a freelance platform for diplomats?
Yes. And we know these days between France, Germany, and the United States, there's probably a need for them too.
There's probably a lot of needs.
You can laugh about this, but here's the interesting data point. More than half of the UK budget is UK staffing budget, resource budget, isn't full-time employees.
Wow.
You think about the Royal Mail. The only thing that the Royal Mail has kept, to the best of my knowledge, is the last 100 feet.
It's the last mile. Everyone's talking about it.
They've got It's not even a mile. It's just 100 feet. So from the road to the mailbox is owned by the Royal Mail. But almost everything else, certainly on the distribution side, has been freelanced out.
Yeah. And in governments worldwide, we see that there's, in the European Union, there's so many budgets that are allocated to external consultants, which at the end of the day is always freelancers.
That's right. We're seeing, and I'll give you one more data set that I think is really interesting. We're not only seeing large growth in freelancing in Europe and the United States, we're also seeing it around the world. So for example, 11% of the people that were filling out the survey for us, and I'll get to the survey in 1 second, were African. And I got a nice note from one of my colleagues who runs a platform in Africa, who said, it's very interesting because our 11% participation in the survey is pretty close to the 12% of freelancers that they count as working full-time or significantly part-time as side giggers in Africa. So we're seeing about 11 or 12, whatever you want to say, in Africa. We're seeing 9 or 10 in Asia. This is a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah, it is a worldwide, it's a global phenomenon. And John, one of the things that always excites me when I talk about what we do at FinTalent is not necessarily that we can find M&A specialists anywhere. What excites me are these little stories, you know, that right now a company in Europe, a company in the United States, they might hire someone from Europe or from the United States to get their deal done. But we both know that in other countries with different, completely different social security system, there are so many talented people, so many bright minds out there that are just so underserved by the job market, by the labor market. And I find freelancing is such a great opportunity to actually get these people also on the table. Yeah.
Perfect. Very well said. And what I like very much about that point, there's a guy named Matt Barry created freelancer.com, the largest freelance platform. Believe it or not, 53 million people are on his platform. He said two things that I thought were really interesting. We chat from time to time. He said, one, that the problem that freelancing solves with the addition of technology is to make it a whole lot easier to bring opportunity and talent together. And the problem, as you pointed out so well, is that I may be a very talented person in Bangladesh, but the opportunity isn't there. So how do we create the opportunity for those folks in Bangladesh? And the answer, if I may give you a personal situation, is I'm working with a young MBA in Ghana. He's my virtual assistant. Now, you might have a problem with the idea that it took a person with an MBA to be my virtual assistant. That's a separate issue.
Yeah.
But we work together extremely well, and he is extremely competent. And I'm absolutely certain within the next year or two, he's going to be one very busy gentleman. And he is in part because I'm going to recommend, because other people are going to recommend him, because it'll get known.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me is he may never meet his clients. He may do a fabulous job of serving them, make sure their needs are met, great quality, reasonable cost, etc. But we may as well be Simone from the movie with Al Pacino, because he doesn't actually know whether we're real or not.
Yeah,
it's a very and in turn, I don't actually well know whether he's real, but we're really seeing through the combination of technology and the reality of having to deal with a pandemic, which is going to change so many things, that this is freelancing's moment to grow.
It is for sure. Let's zoom in also into your virtual assistant, or maybe not specifically him, but. We talked about what people do when they freelance, but why do they freelance? I think that's such a difference because I've been a freelancer for many years now. Many years, I'm 29, but fair enough. I've been a freelancer for a couple of years now. And I have friends that have been freelancers for decades. I've been friends that just started freelancing and the motivation is always different. The one that I often, of course, hear now, especially with remote work being such so much of a bigger thing than it used to be 2 years ago, is money. And having an opportunity. That's the one big thing that I always hear. But there's so many other factors. Now bring on the signs, if you may. What do the numbers say?
One is some really nice work done by a partner of mine in years past. Gene Dalton and Paul Thompson were both profs at the Harvard Business School. And they really did a nice job of identifying some really interesting data.
Yeah.
That led to some work by Ed Schein at MIT, which led to some work at Brigham Young University by a guy named Brooke Dewar. And at the end of all of that, what you had were what they called career anchors or career orientations.
Yeah.
So you'll tell me which one is your major, because we all have more than one minor.
Yeah.
Tell me which one is your major. First, I want to make a lot of money. But I don't want to make a lot of money just to have money. I want that money because it provides me with agency. It provides me with choice. It provides me with independence. It allows me to say, screw you. I don't want to do that. Second, what really excites me is having a relationship long term with a set of clients that get to know me and I get to know them. So I don't want to be a freelancer in the sense of if it's Tuesday, I'm still with this guy, or Wednesday, I'm still with this guy. Third, what I'm looking for is work-life balance. I got a lot of interests. I've got kids. I love to paint. I want to do work, but I also want to spend time with my family. I want to be able to do it all in moderation, and freelancing makes that possible for me. Fourth is, I want enough independence so that nobody tells me how to do what I want to do. What I expect from a client as a freelancer is tell me what the deliverable is, tell me what the timeline is, I'll get it done. Just don't look over my shoulder. I left employment because my boss was always looking over my shoulder, telling me how to do what I was hired to do. And the last one is I need variety. I am going in my personal case, every 2 to 3 years, I need a change. In other cases, it's a year. In other cases, it's 2 years. But we all have a clock inside of us that tells us when it's time to make a change.
Oh, yes.
So, Tobias, those are the five orientations.
You've got me right there. The last one was
it. Last one was it?
Absolutely. Like I was waiting for the fifth one because, of course, all of them resemble a tiny bit how I feel. It's very attractive. You can make a
lot of
money.
Lots of minors.
The
world,
the major is absolutely.
By the way, it changes over time, right?
Yeah. The variety, the variety is my big thing to MSA. Because for me, what is so amazing is that it's I find freelancing is accelerated learning, really, because you work with so many different companies at the same time. And because, of course, as a consultant, you no matter if you, let's say, do more analyst level work or you do more associate level work, no matter what kind of level you're on, you will always have to dig deep into a specific project, into a specific company. And in my case, I work with companies for months, sometimes years. And I always have to dig into their structures, their processes. Mm-hmm. And every time, and I have this chance now that other people don't have, I can compare 20 different companies to each other and take the best learnings and that knowledge and bring them to the next line. And the value is so much higher than anyone that has maybe worked for the same company for 5 years and then they move jobs. And I've seen 20 companies at the same time. And that's just, that variety is very exciting, of course, for myself as a freelancer, but also for the client.
What you just said was really cool. And I want to add a dimension to that, which is, we also know from research that after 2 or 3 years, teams need a change of personnel because they're starting to get stuck. It's the same thing with freelancers. Have you noticed in your work with companies, when you know, if you've been a consultant, et cetera, after a certain period of time, they want to get rid of you because they want the next it person. They want the next new person.
Yeah.
One of the implications of that is that one of the findings of the survey is we use the term, the magic is in the mix.
Yeah.
You got to set up as a freelancer a portfolio that admits the possibility that some clients are going to leave you, other clients are going to come in. You're going to have a period when there's instability around the portfolio overall. You got to manage that.
Yeah. I think building community is the hardest thing. And I think especially if you have big marketplace with many different types of freelancers, it becomes incredibly difficult. And that's, I think we're lucky it was well chosen, but I think we're also lucky in the sense that there is this really feeling of community. And there's, if you go to any event that has the freelancers or the talents that we work with in the financial sector, you will just have immediately this feeling of community. And if you just bring a couple of designers and programmers together, you would just won't have that kind of feeling.
Exactly. It's an excellent point. Excellent point.
John, you just mentioned that there's a certain skill set they require to be a freelancer, and that of course freelancers need help building that skill set. And of course, if you're a marketing freelancer, you should probably know a thing or two about marketing. If you're a designer, you should probably know a thing or two about design. But apart from their core competency to do their job, what are other skills that freelancers require, and what are the skills they most need to work on?
It's a great question. And the simple answer to that is, think of freelancers as small business owners. So what are the things that a small business owner needs to know? You need a strategy. You need funding. You need to have a client base and to serve that client base. You need to have skills around managing your business in a very traditional sense. You need to understand the analytics, and you need to get the analytics, and you need to make sure that you're on top of how you're doing. You don't want to think about your freelance career as a hobby, because it's not a hobby.
Instead of
running a bodega, instead of running a company, you're running, in this case, yourself. You're a solopreneur, as we call it, who needs all of the skills necessary, because at the end of the day, no matter how much they're helped by a platform, no platform is going to market for you. They may support your marketing. No platform is going to make sure that you have expertise. They're going to help you to sell that expertise, but it's not the same as making sure you've got it, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's a really important understanding, that these guys and gals and everybody in between are small business owners. In our research, what are the areas where they say they need to do better? And the answer seems to be one, an awful lot of these folks don't do a lot of networking. They need to do more networking. They need to understand that they have to continue to fill their bag. Second, time management is really important. Planning is really important. How are you going to spend your day? Third, an awful lot of freelancers that don't like selling. Part of being a small business owner is you got to sell. And the last is staying up to date. Very important to stay up to date. There's one more, and that is managing clients while you're on the job. dealing with those clients, making sure that they're happy, making sure that you're getting feedback on a regular basis, making sure that you're clear, that you're on target in terms of your deliverables, your timelines, your milestones, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of managing the client stuff.
Yeah.
Making sure the making sure that not only is your project staff, your internal project manager competent, but also making sure that you're building the kind of relationships with the team that make it possible, whether you're remote or not. The reality is you're really working entirely on your own.
Yeah,
100%. So making sure that you're building a relationship with the team becomes very important.
Yeah. Yeah. John, I want to close this conversation with a quote that I read in your report, and it was by a digital marketer from the Benelux, so maybe my neighbor, I don't know. And he said about the freelance life, he or she said, "I failed my first attempt being a freelancer because I didn't take time to learn about taxes and money management. I had to step back into employment, take my time to learn what I had to learn, and came back empowered by new knowledge and skills." Now, that is also, in my experience, one of this gap in between employment. Of course, if you're a freelancer, you probably should start as employed because you need to learn a certain core skill set that you don't get taught in university. But then the first year is usually very hard. So how do people bridge that gap?
A couple, three ways. Let me use the example of my consulting firm. I worked for 10 years for Exxon after graduate school, and then joined a consultancy called the Novations Group. Wonderful group of people, and one of the great experiences of my life. And when I got started, a guy named Joe Folkman, who's one of the partners, one of my partners, because I was a partner of the firm, said, "Let me bring you into this project." He couldn't have done a nicer thing for me. He gave me a little revenue. He gave me a little opportunity to try out my stuff. He gave me a chance to get to know the field. And he was smart enough to give me, in this case, it was General Mills, in a survey, so I couldn't screw it up too much. So I think that one of the things that's really important is finding, as you would in an organization, finding a mentor, finding a gang, finding a group of people that you can work with, that you feel good about within the platform, if possible, but outside if necessary. That's the first. Second, the guys at 10X Management, Michael Solomon and Rishon Blumberg, are the two partners in this organization, and they do a really nice job. Michael just wrote something that said, you want to develop slow that so you can advance fast.
Yeah.
And I think that you're talking about that when you say maybe spend a year or two in an organization getting used to how it works. It's pretty tough to jump right into consulting.
Absolutely.
And or right into marketing as a freelancer, or right into tech as a freelancer. It's just, it's a different world, and you need to understand the cadence of that stuff. So that's a second thing that I would say. I think the third thing is, I like the idea of creating what, I don't know whether this makes sense, this phrase makes sense to you, Tobias, but I like the idea of what we call in America a kitchen cabinet, a group of people that sit around the table in the kitchen talking about whatever. I think it makes tremendous sense for every freelancer to create a kitchen cabinet of some people that can help them to find their way. I don't think that's just in the first year. I think that's forever.
The peer group.
And one of the things that we need, one of the things that we desperately need, all of us, but certainly freelancers, is some feedback around what we're doing that's smart and what 100%. We're doing that's not smart.
I think I can so much underline that because in my start as a freelancer, the most helpful thing for me was other people in my network that also started freelancing. And we were going through the same thing and sometimes the same shit, because it's difficult. And it starts with pricing. I don't know, like, I think I charged probably 85% less on my first gig than I did a year after, because I just didn't know how to price myself. And then you exchange and you kind of get, it's difficult.
You got to build a reputation before you can charge for it.
Yeah.
It's very important.
That's also true.
And so one of the questions I ask freelancers, what are you doing to build your reputation? Where are you speaking? Where are you writing? Where are you helping with other things? Where are you involved? Yeah. what are you doing to get your name out there? I give as one example, and I'm a pretty well-known guy just because I've been around forever. But I will never turn away a free opportunity to do a podcast or a webinar. Now, my version of webinar is Ask John Anything, because I've got a bunch of stuff that I can pull out of a hat. But the idea of writing and speaking and being present in the marketplace on a regular basis is really important. And if you're not doing that, it's going to be harder for you to establish yourself as the preferred expert.
And if you do, you can increase your rates, you can get better clients. It's so much more fun. I completely agree with that. John, your global survey on freelancing is out now. Where can people get the report and where can they find
you? Oh my God. Somebody promised that they put together a landing page. I haven't gotten to that yet. I feel terrible about it. So I guess if you're listening to Tobias and I, write to me on LinkedIn. You'll find my name on LinkedIn and I will send you a copy. But I promise in the near future, we'll have a landing page and we'll have a place for people to get the report. And the other thing is I'll keep publishing specific articles about it in the future as well. So you'll see a pretty, I'd like to say a rich vein, a vein that keep sending out articles, either in a Forbes or in a Harvard Business Review or something like that.
All right. Thank you for your time, John. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. This has been so much fun, Tobias. Thank you.